nearer he got to their hearts, the farther he got from his purpose. We are the Spy-Fi Guys, and this is the Molly Maguires. Welcome to Spy-Fi Guys, where we cover spy facts, spy fiction, and everything in between. I'm Christian.
And I'm Zach.
And today we have for you something out of the ordinary, something a bit different. This is not your average spy movie. This is The Molly Maguires from 1970, starring Sean Connery and Richard Harris.
That's right. We're back with more Sean Connery, and what a different movie this is.
Oh, so different.
But so interesting.
Interesting is a word.
Christian, you want to tell us a little bit about how we found out that this movie even existed?
I mean, so for me, I've been doing a rewatch of Sean Connery's entire filmography. Let me see how many I have left, actually. I have 7 films left where he is in a starring role, and I've got 3 where he's a minor role, plus Robin Hood, King of Thieves, or Prince of Thieves, which he has a cameo role in. So maybe about 11 or so left out of his 50-something filmography. This was on my radar for that, and then I got a text from you saying, "Hey, Molly Maguires," and I was like, "Wait, is that a spy film?"
And the reason why I knew about it was because I borrowed from Christian a book called The Cinematic Connery, The Films of Sir Sean Connery, where they mentioned it, and I was like, ooh, it appealed to me because it's Irish, I'm into Irish stuff. And it's about the Molly Maguires. So as a fan of Irish music, there's more than a few songs about the Molly Maguires. So I was like, this is right in my wheelhouse. It's based on a true story, kind of, mostly. Plus we got Sean Connery in it. So what can you ask for?
So this is about sort of, mining town in Pennsylvania. What's your sort of background knowledge on sort of mining towns, that sort of thing? Coal mining.
So my background knowledge about this subject comes from Irish songs, where the miners were exploited,
yeah,
as it was in the times, and they fought back with violence and received violence unto them in return. That's about it.
Okay, so the only thing I really, like, my point of reference for, like, mining towns and coal mining and that sort of stuff is from the movie October Sky, which came out in, what?
Oh, wow.
I would say 2002 or so. Which is about, you know, this kid who grew up in a coal mining town and in the 50s or late 50s and realized he wanted to be a rocket scientist. And he did. His name was Homer Hickam. And he also, it was based on a book, and also he had a number of sequels to that book. So it really got into sort of the coal mining town. Like the book, the movie, which was called Rocket Boys, got really into sort of the coal mining town. So that was my point of reference for like coal mining town and how rough and hard it is down in those mines.
Which is good, because the movie shows it. But we could also get more detail.
Yeah.
And then I should also add, did you see Chernobyl, the series?
I never did, actually.
Well, there's a very interesting part in it with the coal miners, who they use to dig under the power plant. And the coal miners had a hard job, but they also knew how much the Soviet Union depended on them to survive. So they threw their weight around. No, they talked back to the political officers where other people maybe wouldn't.
Interesting. Okay.
So that was interesting.
Alrighty. Well, Zach, why don't you give us our synopses?
Yeah. So as always, we have our poetry synopses for the Molly Maguires. We'll begin with the haiku. Dark times, dark place. A decent man is hard to find. He went down fighting.
All right.
And then, of course, as always, spoilers with these plot synopses. And here is our limerick, which is, of course, appropriate since we're talking about Irish folks.
I didn't even think about that.
And so anyway, it started with coal and with fire, then a man who is looking for hire. However he leans, he'll know what it means to be a Molly Maguire.
Ooh, all right. Golf clap. I like it. I like it a lot.
Thank you. All right. The song helped get me going. I sent Christian a song before we began.
We'll post that song to our social medias just so people know what we're talking about when we reference that song.
It'll help get you in the mood for the podcast. Yeah, and then here is the real IMDb plot summary. In 1876 Pennsylvania, a group of Irish immigrant coal miners begin to retaliate against the cruelty of their work environment.
Okay, all right. So
and here we go.
We start with a montage of mining. And of like we see all these Irish immigrants, and we see them planting explosives. We think it's for, you know, mining purposes. But then this whole montage ends with a mine exploding. And then we get our title, The Molly Maguires. And there's like 14 minutes of all this before we get a single spoken word.
Yeah, Christian, that was an excellent jump. You should say the beginning is the camera slowly goes up a mine and slowly goes down.
I mean, it's a montage. What more do I need to say?
My girlfriend was asleep within about 5 minutes.
This is why I've tried to start this film 3 times, and I didn't get past the first 5 minutes, mostly because I, as a dad, I'm watching this when my baby's asleep, so I'm like, it's later in the evening, so I've tried like 3 times, and yeah.
I also watched some of this at 1.25 speed. First time I've done this for a Spotify, guys. I might as well just admit it now.
Yeah, all right, that's fine. I mean, it's a lot. I mean, it gets you in the mood of all of that, but 14 minutes is a lot.
Yeah, it's like an art movie.
So, after all of this, we meet James Parlin, played by Richard Harris, who's new in town. Now, what's your point of reference for Richard Harris? I gotta know.
Richard Harris? I mean, the name sounded familiar, but I didn't know anything that he was in.
Oof, Zach. All right, Harry Potter fans are gonna come after you, because he was the first Dumbledore.
Yeah, okay, see, I knew he sounded familiar.
But your musical theater fans are gonna come after you, too, because he is... Oh, at least musical theater movies. He was in Camelot.
I've never seen that.
What?
Is that good?
Yes, it is amazing. What are you doing, Zach?
What are some of the songs from it? Is it
Excuse
musical?
Excuse me? Yeah. It is a key, you know, cultural touchstone of the 1960s. There's a reason why movie is the reason why JFK's reign was known as Camelot.
I should have figured they wouldn't just get a historical reference. Sean Connery in Camelot too, or considered to be in it?
No, he is in at least 3 films which have Arthurian connections. None of them is Camelot.
Okay, I think they talked about it in the book, like maybe they considered him and he turned them down, or
it's
something
entirely
like that.
Possible because he, you know, his start was sort of in the South Pacific, sort of touring. For London in England. No. So, yeah, Richard Harris, big deal. So, this is interesting. So, you have Connery, who's obviously, you know, at that. I'm not going to say his height because he's had so many heights, but one of his heights in the 60s. This is 1970. And then you also had Richard Harris, who's coming off his height in for 1967's Camelot. So, 2 powerhouses here.
Yeah, and they both have these big mustaches. How did you feel about that? I know Sean Connery has a mustache pretty much whenever he's not James Bond.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you feel about it?
I like that mustache. As someone who has a mustache, I appreciated the mustache. It was a nice mustache. I mean, for me, I kind of like the Errol Flynn sort of, you know, mustache, but that mustache works on Connery.
Sure. What about Richard Harris's, though?
That's a good mustache, too. Like, again, you look at him in Camelot. He's got the mustache and the chin strap beard, so it works on him. So I'm used to him seeing, and then, of course, obviously, Dumbledore, he's got a great big bushy beard, so used to him with facial hair. It would be weird if I didn't see him with facial hair. I don't know.
Yeah, fair enough.
James Parlin, Richard Harris, goes to the bar, which is where everyone is. He gets in on a card game. The other bar patrons are sort of suspicious of him. We get our first glimpse of Sean Connery, a.k.a. Jack Kehoe, the bar.
Yeah, we also get a little Irish music, including Molly Malone, the classic tune.
Ah, yes. Which I had to look up. I was like, wait, that's not the same. Like, I couldn't remember if the song was called Molly Malone or Molly Maguire's. I also had to look up, all right, is the statue in Dublin is that Molly Malone or Marmalade McGuire? It's Molly Malone.
Did you see the Molly Malone statue while you were there?
I did see it. I have a photo of it. I did not rub the area where everyone else had rubbed. That would be a
weird. Wondering about that.
No, did not. But I did, you know, I didn't hear the song, you know, and what, how does, is it, I know it's something Fair City.
In Dublin's Fair City, okay. Where the girls are so pretty.
I knew, I was like, wait, I know it's something Fair City. I was like, how do I fit Dublin in there? Okay, yeah, okay.
That's right.
So I'm familiar with the song as well. That's right, I do remember hearing that now that we talk about that. But yeah.
But something I appreciate about this scene is that it's like something out of Dungeons and Dragons, where a stranger comes to the tavern looking for a job, any job, and then gets into a fight. Or I guess like a karate movie too.
Oh, what karate movie have you been watching?
Well, like, you know, the traveling stranger who's good at fighting and just wants to be left alone, but then he always gets pulled in.
Okay, that's more of a kung fu movie than a. Anyways, besides the point.
Yeah.
So he is asking about the mine, but he's clearly never worked in a mine before. They actually, you know, see his hands and they're, you know, soft hands. And yeah, he gets into a fight, and as the fight happens, he gets knocked out by the cops. Now, when he's alone with one of the cops, whose name is Captain...
I like the way that the captain guy talks. He has a very interesting kind of way that he talks.
What is the captain's name? I have it somewhere.
You pay attention. Let me see if I can find it. Captain Fraser?
Yeah, that's the one. Captain Fraser, who reveals that James Parlin is his inside man, and that the cops think there's a group of Irish miners who are causing all of the problems in this little city, known as the Molly Maguires. And so his job is to infiltrate them.
Yeah, we have the info dump here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cool. This movie feels very old. Very old.
Okay.
In many ways. But I like that they had us do the action and then the explanation for why he's there. Whereas I feel like the movies in the past would have him explain it first and then he goes in. I appreciated that.
James McParlin goes to rent a room at the inn from Mary. And he makes friends with her dad. Says that he's looking to work in the mine. And also he gives his name as McKenna here, but also first name is James still. So I'm just going to refer to him as James so we don't get confused with McParlin or McKenna.
There you go.
And he works a day in the mine, and it is tough. It's a lot of hard work. Also, I found it crazy that, well, I guess, what year is this?
1876.
So I get, what year was the light bulb invented?
Earlier than that. I think it's like 1830s.
Yeah.
Have you ever played that board game where you have to put the inventions in order of when they're invented?
I feel like I have. Hold on. I have to know.
Oh, that's a good one. 19th century is brutal, though.
Yeah.
They're inventing all kinds of stuff. Regardless, they don't have one.
1879? What year did you say this was?
1876.
Oh, so it's actually before that. Okay, yeah, but their helmets have no light bulbs. It is a literal, like... There is a literal flame on their helmets. I was like, wow, that's crazy.
Did you notice when they start work, by the way? Did you really at 5 a.m.? They start at 5 a.m.
I did not catch that. No. Oof. Oh, my God.
And Mary got up to get him breakfast because she loves him.
Just a nice person. But yeah, probably the latter, the former. Anyways, he gets paid $9.24 for the week. And he ends up with only 24 cents for the entire week.
I kind of wish the movie had made it a little bit more clear. I remember thinking at the time that when I was watching it, that I was like, I like a little bit more about their oppressive conditions that they're under. But maybe the movie actually did do enough. They just did it in a more subtle way than what we usually see. And this scene is a particularly good example of that.
Oh, yeah. This 24 cents. I mean, granted inflation, but still,
I looked it up.
Did you? Okay, thank you.
I could save it for Spy Factor.
No, just tell me now. Just tell me now, because I want to.
It's worth $7 today.
Oh.
Yeah.
How about $9.24? How much was that worth? Or did you not do that math?
In the 1876 bucks?
Yeah.
I feel like the mine pays for their food and stuff. So $9.24, 1876 is worth $270 today.
For a week? Oof. Oof.
Yeah. Well, especially difficult work too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a lot of work. That is a hard day's work there. So we next go to the church where everyone is because, of course, they're good Irish Catholic.
Yeah, of course. The priest in this scene totally comes off as like the face of the system. You know?
Interesting. Well, that's why, like...
She's like, violence is wrong, violence is bad, everybody just be nice to each other.
This is interesting for me having, you know, Rocket Boy slash October Skazmir point of reference, because in the book, they also go into that how... Well, they go into more of how there's a tension between the company and the union, and where the church lies within that, whether they're the company, like the church... And whoever the priest decides will do more towards the company's point of view or the union's point of view. And so it's like, oh, so it's really in mining towns. It seems like it's almost a universal experience.
I don't know if the movie was intentionally trying to make it seem like the church was fulfilling their role as the opiate of the masses to like keep them docile.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm reading too much into
Maybe a little. I mean, but, actually, no. You know what? I don't think you're reading that much into it. But yeah. But, I mean, we'll see
that's
how
an
that
interesting
is
stance. Yeah.
When we get to the end, where that lies.
Hmm.
The priest is condemning the, you know, last night's actions by the Molly Maguires, which were, you know, beating a watchman and flooding a mine. Also, we see that James here is attending the church with Mary, and he sees Kehoe there as well.
Right.
And the next day, Jack Kehoe confronts James in the mines and asks there. James very, you know, I'm here because I need a place to work, and this is where I found.
Although the movie has some very slow parts, the dialogue, I think, is pretty good. And it's snappy, especially when you watch it slightly elevated.
Okay,
speed.
Hold on. So, you didn't just didn't just watch that 14 minutes of intro at 1.25. You watched the rest of the movie at that speed?
Not the rest of it, just a big chunk of it.
All right.
Once it got more talky, then I slowed it down.
Interesting. Okay. James is about to get crushed by a huge avalanche of coal and then saves him by pulling him out of the path.
So do you think the guys intentionally
that? Oh, yeah.
Because if you watch it, the guys are pulling it down.
No, it's completely intentional. Definitely.
So James also mentioned that he was in prison for, quote, shoving the queer. Or is it shaving the queer?
Shoving the queer.
I thought that was funny.
You know what that means.
Shoving the queer, yeah. You learn from context it means forging money.
Yeah.
Or counterfeiting money.
Yeah. So, which is an interesting phrase, but yeah. So, he was a counterfeiter, and also apparently he tells him that he killed a man in Buffalo over a woman.
So this was really good. I liked this. Mm-hmm. I quite like this part. When he's like, oh, I'm on the run for counterfeiting, and Jack is like, no way, dude. No way. A mine is harder than any jail. Yeah. So what's the real reason? Mm-hmm. But then he actually has a good real reason.
Yeah.
He doesn't get caught so easily.
But so later on, Kehoe is James with his wife and then with the other miners. Suspect that he could be a spy, but they figure the best way to catch him is who he is just to bring him in.
They make an interesting point where if they kill him, more spies will just come, which is true. But then it's like, what are they going to do? Like the whole like spy game part of the movie is really weird.
Oh,
they only don't test him that much. I feel like they believe him pretty easily. Like I thought the movie was going to be this cat and mouse, like mind game between James and Jack Kehoe, but it's not. It's really not.
No, it's something very different. So. And I'll get to the point where it crystallized for me exactly what this movie was and what it reminded me of. We're not here yet, but we'll get there.
Yeah, that's fine. And so, by the way, Christian, something interesting about this spy movie, which we haven't seen, it'd be true for all of these old, tiny ones, but there's no technology. There's no technology in the spying.
Mm-hmm. the movie which I try to forget. No, I'm kidding. I don't actually. I do quite enjoy it. Michael Collins.
Oh, Michael Collins, yeah. That's right. Yeah. That's true, too.
Yeah. There's a football match. Actually, was this football?
Oh,
I think
gosh.
This was rugby.
No, it was rugby. Yeah. And this part goes on for so long.
But yeah, so
it's like, we get it. They're playing rugby. But I also thought, wow, it's a very violent sport, as if their bodies aren't taking enough damage in the mine.
Well, yeah, they're playing against another set of coal miners, and then there's a big fight, and then during that big fight, folks are beaten by the police, and James ends up, you know, getting into the fight and breaks a policeman's jaw,
which establishes his cover.
Yeah, yeah. And later, the Captain Frazier sort of chats James, but he said, you know, he had to make it look real, which is, you know, exactly what the captain said before when he knocked him out, and that he had to make in the bar. He said he had to make it look real.
Yeah, I also appreciated that the fight at the rugby match was set up by the two guys arguing over the redheaded woman.
Is that what?
Of course, she's redheaded because she's Irish. Yeah, well, I mean, do you remember the part where they're like, oh, she's coming home with me?
Oh,
I don't even remember what they said, but it's like, she's interested in me. No, she's interested in me, or whatever. Yeah. I feel like if it were a modern movie, they would move a lot faster with that. Or just have a guy be like drunk or something, and that's what starts everybody brawling. Right.
So after that, Jack Kehoe and the other ringleaders of the Molly Maguires all appear at Mary's house, and like they have her and her father sort of leave the main area, and they make James kneel, and they're like making the sign of the cross, which makes it seem like they're about to kill him, but instead they make him a member of the Ancient Order of Hibernians.
Yes. And you know Hibernians, you know that means Christian?
Don't, actually.
So that's what the Romans called Ireland, was Hibernia.
Interesting. Okay.
That might come in handy. It actually has come up in bar trivia before.
Really? All right.
The scene where they're about to kill him, again, I thought the whole movie was going to be like this, where any second he was afraid his cover was going to get blown and he was going to get capped. Mm-hmm. I mean, after this, it seems like they trust him pretty much entirely.
Yeah, and they like I liked this part where they teach him all of the like little code phrases or code like motions, but also he's definitely like they're keeping him drinking while they're teaching this to like, all right, make sure that it's both a test of, you know, your how much you can hold your alcohol, but then also your memory.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, so here, audience, here's some spy stuff. There you go.
Yeah.
Just in case you were wondering. But I do like that Jack still doesn't trust him, and he's still keeping an eye on him. Kind of makes sense. It's like keep your friends close and your enemies closer. Mm-hmm. And something else I appreciated about this movie is his job is to get evidence so he can bring the Molly Maguires in.
Yeah.
How many other spy movies have we seen where that's the mission? None.
None, but if this counts as a spy movie, I have two more that we could technically count as a spy movies.
I mean, we've had The Departed on the list for a long
time. I will get
time,
to those when I get to the moment it crystallized for me. It's coming, don't worry.
Okay.
Yeah, so after this, Mary sort of gives him a hard time for joining, but literally the very next day, like a train ride into the city, and they go shopping, and while Mary is, you know, looking at some hats that he said, you know, money's no object, he meets with the Captain Frazier and gets, you know, some help his cover, right, but also so that he can pay for all the stuff that he's buying for Mary.
You notice also that he hurt himself in order to get a day off.
Is that what that was? Okay, I wasn't sure. I thought that it was part of, like, the initiation stuff that we just didn't see. Maybe he had to put his hand over a flame or something.
No, I don't think so. Because he said all it took was a few smashed fingers to get me my day off.
Oh, I missed that. Okay, so yeah, all right. That makes more sense.
Yeah, he really must have cost him a lot of money, because not only did he pay for all that hats and stuff for, but he probably cost him a day's wages.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that's, you know.
Yeah, he gets the counterfeit money from the captain, but he also gives him some nails in return.
Yeah. So next we see there's a train of coal wagons, and they're going on their tracks, and we see some of the Mollies in Kehoe who are setting an explosive in the tracks. And we see the explosion and see it get derailed.
In this part, as well as in the beginning, there's some good Irish-style music. The movie has some good music.
Yeah. So later, at a meeting of the Hibernians in someone's house, James is asked to put a superintendent at the Shenandoah pit out of action. So Jack and James go to Shenandoah, but once they do, they're ambushed by the police.
This was wild. So this is our first gunfight. Of which there's a couple, and it's a good gunfight, and it reminded me of Bonnie and Clyde. Have you ever seen Bonnie and Clyde?
Actually.
The old
I mean, I know.
Yeah. I heard it's like amazing. It's like it changed America, and it's okay. I don't know if it entirely holds up, but the fighting in this part did kind of remind me of that.
All right. All right. Okay.
Where it's like a very old school movie. Everyone's very nice. Everyone keeps their clothes on. There's no swearing. And then suddenly, bam, 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 extreme violence.
Right. All right. I believe the used. In that used to be at the old Crime and Punish Museum that used to be in like Chinatown area of DC. So I've seen the car, but I've never seen the movie.
Mm. Oh yeah, that car is sweet.
Yeah. The police arrest 8 men at the pit, but all of them have alibis. And James and to the captain to interview, but of course this is just, you know, an excuse for him to exchange information. But then of course also has to before he returns.
A couple things about this. So first of all, they shoot at least one cop, which kind of blew my mind. Mm-hmm. And this part where he goes back for his friend too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. So he goes back for his friend, but I cannot believe that the Maguires weren't like, okay, James knew about this and the cops were waiting for them. Obviously they got tipped off, but they think it's the Shenandoah guys who do it and not the new guy. Oh my God. It's like, come on. Are they like stupid or something?
He's already starting to prove himself. Like he broke that cop's jaw. So I think that sort of proved to the, at least hint that he is actually with us and not, you know, a spy.
Yeah. I mean, that's just what they want you to think. But then also, we learn later that Jack is very impressed that he went back for the friend.
Hey, that ploy worked. So we also get a scene where James and Mary go for a picnic and they talk about morality.
Is this the part with the riddles,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, also that, yeah.
So that was kind of interesting.
I have my say about that.
Well, hang on, really quickly, though. This comes from an era like Michael Collins, where every movie needs to have a love story, no matter how inappropriate it is.
Yeah.
Okay. And yeah, yeah, they could have cut this out.
Not as much of a focus as Michael Collins.
Well, that is true. But then also, the other thing I have here is when they go to their picnic spot, it shows them slowly walk and then slowly walk some more. It's like 3 separate shots of them walking.
Watch, I have no idea where this was filmed. But I do know. But when you've got that landscape, you might as well show it off.
So, Christian, something that crystallized to me at this part while we were talking about it is, you know how there's too many remakes now? Remakes of old movies that are better. And people are like, well, maybe some movies needed a remake, like Judge Dredd. This is another one that could use a modern remake, I think.
Interesting. All right, all right. I mean, actually, in this day and age, I could see it. Yeah.
I mean, it's a good story, and it's interesting, but it needs an update.
Yeah, yeah.
It needs some modern sensibilities. But
so right here is where things really start to get kicked up a notch, because we get one of the ringleaders of the Molly Maguires and his wife. I believe this is the person who, I can't remember his name, but it's the person whose house the last Hibernian's meeting was in. Him and his wife are shot dead by a masked man, and their like infant son is like right next to them. I was honestly a little surprised that the kid didn't get killed too.
I mean, yeah, it's very violent, like Bonnie and Clyde, but it also, again, I know we keep talking about Michael Collins, but this is the most Michael Collins-y part. Not because they're Irish, though that contributes, but it's more because they run up to a guy in his house, shoot him, and then run away.
Yeah.
Just like in that movie. And it looks like the cops did it. It looks like the cops did it, but they can't prove it, which kind of begs the question, if the cops can always get away with it, why don't they just kill all of the Molly Maguires extrajudiciously?
Because they didn't have their names.
Oh, yeah. Thanks to the... Well, they knew about Kehoe.
Yeah.
And a couple of other ones, but not all of them, certainly. Yeah.
And then here's where I think Priest is definitely towing the company line, because he's like giving the mourners a talking to at the gravesite during the funeral.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a little bit inappropriate.
Yeah. Yeah, so the Molly Maguires figure out that it's the cops who did this, because one of the neighbors saw the masked man and saw the striped pants, which apparently was part of the cop uniform at that time.
Yeah, they didn't even really bother to disguise themselves very well.
No. Here we get James trying to convince them to stand down, but Jack will not back down.
I mean, they talk about, should we retaliate? Yeah. And if so, against who? Or James, of course, says, if you retaliate, they'll just retaliate harder. And then where will it end?
Yeah, yeah. Because Jack won't stand back down. The Maguires attempt to retaliate. But then a bunch of them are captured and taken by the cops.
Oh my, the cops were again tipped off. Again, it was a trap. Again, they can't figure out who did it.
Also, we've been saying the cop's name wrong this entire time. Captain's name is Davies, not Frazier.
Oh, yeah. Frazier might have been the guy who got shot.
Yeah, it is, yeah. James goes to the woods to meet with Captain Davies, and Captain Davies says that the agency's very pleased, and he might get a promotion out of this, but of course James is feeling guilty about this.
So, Christian, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Did you ever think that James was going to switch sides?
Yes.
You did?
Yes.
Mm. I never really felt like he was going to.
And I'll tell you exactly why in like two scenes, because of this movies that this reminded me of.
All right. I guess we'll wait for that then.
Yeah. Yeah. Jack Kehoe is summoned to Mary's house because her father is dying. Priest is there giving him the father's last rites and tells Jack that the captured Molly, whose name I forget, maybe it's, I think it's Frazier, will be tried for
Doherty?
Killing.
No.
Maybe it's, I don't know.
Yeah, it's Doherty.
Will be tried for killing attendant. And Jack's like, but he had nothing to do with that. He's like, well, you know, they've got him, so they're just going to pin everything on him. And the priest tries to convince him to stop, but then also tells Jack that there's an informer, and that's where he starts to get that idea. So this is why I'm like, okay, he's been towing the priest's been towing, but why tell Jack there's an informer? Why even give them that hint?
It's like all these other authoritarian regimes. Every time you got an oppressive system, he can't fight the system himself, the priest. He's only doing what he needs to do to survive. But he's still, like, I don't want to say loyal, but he's sympathetic to the Molly Maguires. So he's helping them out.
We next have the wake for Mary's father. It is a literal Irish wake, although not as much of a barnstormer as I was expecting from an Irish wake.
Yeah, that must have been after the sun goes down.
Well, this is also the first time we actually see Kehoe. And James is surprised, said, thought you didn't touch the stuff. And he's like, well, I'm making an exception. And he's like, wow, when you make exceptions, you really do it. Because Jack is pretty drunk. He makes a bean. He gives this whole speech about how, you know, it's not right. And, you know, he worked for, you know, Myers' father worked for years. And he could have basically made a name for himself and done something, but he didn't. And now he doesn't even have a proper suit to bury himself in.
Yeah, he gets mad at the corpse.
Yeah. He and a bunch of the men, they break into the company store. They steal a suit to bury Mary's father in. He steals a bunch more clothes and throws it out to the men. And all the while, James is watching Kehoe. And at a certain point, he grabs a shovel and decides to trash the store. And then they set the place on fire. And then this moment, I realize, what is this movie? Where the cop is undercover with the criminals and doesn't want to incriminate the criminals, but does. But also he's drawn in by just the charisma of this
main
guy.
Don't say it, Christian.
It's Fast and Furious.
Ah, I knew it.
But Fast and Furious, remake of Point Break, except without surfboards and with cars. So it also reminded me of that.
Well, except this is like the opposite of Fast and Furious, where fast, but this is slow.
Yeah. But that was like... Oh, that's why I'm getting... This is so familiar seeming to me. It was like, it's Point Break. And it's the first Fast and the Furious, yes.
I haven't seen Point Break, so please don't get mad at me. I haven't seen a lot of movies. But I seem to remember that in that movie, they were not ideological. Weren't they just criminals?
Depends on it was not about the ideology. It was about the lifestyle. About cars and about that. Living quarter mile at a time. So there's that ideology, at least in Fast and Furious. And then in Point Break, it is about the thrill, the extreme sports, is tracing that adrenaline.
Right.
As opposed to, this is more philosophical, more political. Yeah. Hey, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
Chasing that adrenaline, that's really sympathetic. Or living your life that quarter mile at a time. There's a reason why those movies has made a couple billion at least dollars because people find that sympathetic.
I was not expecting that.
I was wondering if you'd see that coming.
Well, yeah, the build that was held. I thought you were going to say The Departed.
So I've actually never seen The Departed. But because of that, so this is why I'm like, all right, this cat's a spy movie.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously. I think it's pretty clear that it is.
This was reminding me of those two movies, and in both of those movies, spoiler alert, the guy, he doesn't necessarily, switch sides, but he at least lets the other guy go. That's why I was like, I believe that he could switch sides, potentially.
I see. I see.
We get Kehoe, James, and another Molly Maguire, whose name I forget. Maybe this is Frasier. Who knows? Are about to blow up the mine, or not the mine, but the, what is it called? The coal breaker, which is this big, the big prop that we see.
Right.
Where you're coming into it, and then you have like the boys who are in there sorting through the mine and picking out on anything. Yeah, so they're about to blow that up.
Yeah, child miners.
And he tells James, all right, guard this man. Once they come, are about to set everything, they're captured by the police. Kehoe looks up and sees that James is not where he told him to be.
Mm.
This is probably when the wheels start turning for him.
That's right. Much too late, though.
Yeah, much, much sooner.
That's what I've been saying.
Yeah. So Kehoe and the other Molly Maguires are charged in court. And then we get this great scene where James is called as the first witness, and you see the door open, just playing cards with Captain Davies.
Yeah. Ooh, the betrayal. What a scumbag.
And Kehoe tries to confront him, but is pulled back by the bailiffs. And we see that the jury finds them all guilty.
And to hang. Yeah.
Executed by hanging. And James is told by Captain Davies that he's going to be promoted, then they're going to open up a new branch, which they might put him in charge of. Leaves the courtroom, he sees Mary is there waiting for him, and we get this big scene where she says that, she could have accepted him as a criminal, and they could have run away together, but as a cop, she can't do it, and she wishes she could, but she can't.
And a cop that betrays one of his own, too. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And at this point, I'm still, all right, is he going to do something? Is he going to break Kehoe out of prison? Is he going to do something? In my mind, I'm saying that there's still a chance. Maybe he's feeling guilty about that. Maybe he's going
to... Sorry, Christian, this ain't no fairy tale.
Yeah. He goes to visit Kehoe in prison. Kehoe knows he couldn't have won, but he could have at least, pushed the company into doing something. And he says that, James did more than he needed to for the job. He didn't need to go back for the eye. Other things. And then Jack also tells him that he had one more job that he had planned for a bridge. And here's my mind's like, oh, is the end scene gonna be, James carrying out that plan? maybe. And then Jack says that James came there for absolution, not And so it's to get rid of all this pain you're carrying, because you want to be punished for this guilt that you're carrying around. And at that point he goes crazy and tries to choke James out, but the cops come in to stop him. And then as he leaves the prison, James sees some cops testing out the hangman's stocks as credits roll.
Wow, what a sudden ending. What a brutal ending. It's very interesting. Makes you think. So my question to you, though, this movie is not The Fast and the Furious.
No, it's
set in the real world. So how exactly would he have been able to get away with it if he had betrayed?
Your Hollywood ending. If this was not based on a true story, I would say maybe he doesn't break out Jack, but he does carry out his last plan, and then he goes and runs away with Mary.
Yeah, he just runs away.
Yeah.
Well, see, so that's what's interesting about this situation, okay? You're in an oppressive system, not unlike that of other authoritarian regimes, okay? So let's say you're Jack Kehoe. Okay, I really don't know what I would do. If you use violence like the Molly Maguires do, eventually you get caught and killed. But if you don't, the system just sucks, and eventually you'll just die of black lung. And if you organize, labor unions were not very well organized at the time.
Wow.
So they would probably...
Wow.
I guess that's how they ended up doing it, right? You're going to get to that later.
Interesting, yeah. Do you have anything about the unions? By fact, for
speculation. No,
all right,
I don't.
Okay, just from me reading a little bit into it, that there is debate within historians on whether the Molly Maguires are responsible for the events portrayed in the movie.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
There's a historical debate on why Pinkertons was sent down. Was it to break up the Molly Maguires, or cause disruption for the unions, which the Irish were very much in support of, and which were causing issues for the company?
Oh yeah, I actually have a little bit of that. I guess we're going into spy.
Yeah, so let's head on in since we're there.
Hey, do you want me to go first?
Yeah, since we've already started, and you apparently have some stuff because I don't have too much about that.
A couple things. The Molly Maguires hoax terrorists are working class heroes by James Ottavio Castagnera on the History Place. So They talk about Jack Kehoe did mine coal in his time, but he was also a tavern owner and a high official of the Ancient Order of Hibernians and a small-time politician.
Mm-hmm.
So the film's fundamental premise, which is that the Molly Maguires did all this stuff, has been questioned since 20 Mollies were hanged between 1877 and 1879. And now the hoax theory is that Franklin Gowan, president of the Philadelphia and Reading Railroad, like from Monopoly, the Reading Railroad, was smarting from the rise of the Working Men's Benevolent Association, which was an early labor union. Mm-hmm. So they conspired to insert an instigator, like James, into the Ancient Hibernians, not to unmask them, but to incite violence and allow them to, you know, allow the regime to come down hard.
The Captain Davies is even saying, you know, we can't get them on just what they're doing now. We need them to kill a man, basically, or at least attempt to kill a man.
That's a pretty subtle way to do that, which I like. Joseph G. Rayback, author of A History of American Labor, has observed, the charge has been made that the Molly Maguires episode was deliberately manufactured by the coal operators to destroy unionism in the area.
Yeah.
So we mentioned this before, the Pinkertons. I guess you know who the Pinkertons are. The audience might not. They're basically private detectives that were infamous.
And I have a little bit about them, but
Finally, on Wikipedia about James McParland, using the name James McKenna, he did infiltrate and help to dismantle the Molly Maguires. So the movie was accurate in that sense. And on 10 December 1876, three men and two women with Molly connections were attacked in their house by masked men. One woman in the house, the wife of one of the guards, was taken outside before being shot dead. Oof. So that's scary.
Jeez.
So he didn't like that. James didn't. But he did eventually carry out his mission. And then one last kind of interesting thing is reports of McParland's success against the Maguires came to the attention of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, author of the Sherlock Holmes detective fiction. And he wrote him into a book called The Valley of Fear, creating an encounter between the fictional Sherlock Holmes and a character whose history loosely recalled McParland's experience with the Molly Maguires.
Now that I've seen that a couple of times, I'm curious now to read that story and see what inspiration Arthur Conan Doyle took from that.
And so that's all I got. Carry on, Christian.
All right, so I mean, I have a few things. One sort of about the Ancient Order of Hibernians. This is from Wikipedia. It is an Irish Catholic organization. All members must be male Catholic and either born in Ireland or of Irish descent. Now, the largest membership is in the U.S., where it was founded in New York City in 1836. And the name was adopted by groups of Irish immigrants in the U.S. Its purpose was to act as guards to shield Catholic churches from anti-Catholic forces in the mid-19th century and to assist Irish Catholic immigrants, especially those who faced discrimination or harsh coal mining working conditions. And here's where it mentions, of course, that many members of the coal mining area of Pennsylvania allegedly had a background with the Molly Maguires.
I think the movie could have done more to show how they were being discriminated against for being Irish. I got the impression from the movie was that all those coal miners were treated equally badly.
Well, I think all of those coal miners were Irish, so they were all being treated terribly. From what it sounds like, it is a fraternal organization similar to the Masons. Have you ever had any experience with either, you know, Freemasons or any sort of Masonic organizations?
You know, something interesting living here in D.C. is they have these giant Masonic temples around.
Yeah.
Never see anyone coming in or out of them. So I can't say I know too much more besides just the layman's info.
I mean, so there is a Filipino fraternal organization that I had been inducted into, but never really did anything with. It's Order of Rizal after Jose Rizal. But like maybe if I got slightly more involved with it, I've learned all the code phrases and all that thing. But that's what it was called. It was a ceremony including like blindfolding, but.
Wow. You want me to cut that out? You sure you want the internet to know about that in case they come after you?
I mean, it was also in a very public ceremony. So, like, we had, like, family members there. So it's not like it's something secret, really.
Yeah, not really secret.
No. I assume Masonic rituals are a bit more secretive than that.
Safe to say.
But then what else I've got is about the Pinkertons. So they are a private security guard and detective agency established around 1850 in the U.S. by a Scottish-born American Cooper. Cooper is apparently a person trained to make baskets, vats, and buckets. So, Scottish-born American Cooper, Alan Pinkerton. Now, this is all from Wikipedia. Now, its biggest claim to fame, or at least early done was when Pinkerton claimed to foil the Baltimore plot to assassinate President-elect Abraham Lincoln, and he hired Pinkerton agents to conduct espionage against the Confederacy and act as his personal security during the American Civil War. In this way, they were basically to the Secret Service, because there was no Secret Service at that time.
Yeah, they were cool.
Well, cool is a word.
They do a lot of stuff.
I will say. There are is a history of sort of conflicts with labor unions. But
they have a checkered past.
But interestingly, in 1999, the company was bought by Securitas AB, which you may have seen around as just being a private security firm, but they're actually a Swedish company. Lastly, we've mentioned it briefly, but so pushing the queer. So this is from John Hopkins University Press, and it says that the slang term queer is now generally understood to refer to homes. It has been used in phrases referring to counterfeiting and counterfeit money since at least the 17th century. Apparently, this usage continued well into the 19th century. It's listed as one of the meanings of to shove the queer is the definition of passing counterfeit money. With no context for it, us in the modern day, when you say that you're in trouble for shoving the queer, it seems like something very different.
Happy Pride, everybody.
Wow, that's great timing, Zach.
Sure.
Anyway, so that's what I got for Spy Fact for Spy Fiction.
All right, so now we have our favorite quotes. I can go first. The movie actually had some pretty good dialogue.
Yeah, good dialogue, but I don't know that. Well, okay, go ahead. Sure.
I just thought it was funny when the priest was making his lecture. He says, "The church condemns all secret societies." That amused me. And then a couple of cool lines is James says, "I could always tell the buttered side from the dry."
You took that line. All right.
Can I steal that?
Yeah.
Okay. The captain says to him, "You step out of line and I'll step on you." Except he has it in that like cool way of talking, which I can't replicate. And then finally, I'll give the last line that I like to Mary, where she says, "The old man did the lying. I just did the agreeing." I thought that was pretty darn clever.
For context of that, I could always tell the butter side from the dry, that the cop, Captain Davies, says, "Don't get confused about which side you're on." And then he gets that. That's when James says, "I could always tell the butter side from the dry."
See, that's why I didn't think he was going to betray him.
Yeah. I also liked from James, after he almost gets killed by the coal avalanche, he says to Jack, "If you're making a choice between getting killed and a little bit of information, ..
There you go. Any other ones?
No, that's it.
All right, so now it's time for our ratings on a scale of 1 to 10 martinis, 1 being Avengers 1998 and 10 being even better than Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. How would we rate the Molly Maguires? Christian, why don't you go first this time? I feel like I usually go first.
Yeah, with good reason, because you're usually a downer and I bring things up a bit.
I'm going to be a downer again, so I go first.
All right.
So this movie is hard to rate. I've been speaking very positively about it. Dialogue is like snappy. I love how it's different. It's different in so many ways. It is not your typical spy movie. The conflict is interesting. There's a lot of big concepts. There's low-tech spies. So there's a lot of positives. But on the negative sides, the characters are like not that smart. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like Jack should have been able to figure out what was going on. It doesn't have like that narrative arc where it's like he gets closer and closer and closer until boom, the big betrayal. And then the Molly Maguires get killed.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of more like goes up and down. And more to the point, it's just boring. I'm sorry. It's very slow.
All right.
Especially the first half. The second half does pick up a little bit.
Yeah.
But the first half is like, oh my God, it's going to put you to sleep. It put Christian to sleep.
Nice.
There you go. So I really can't in good conscience give it like a good high rating.
Yeah.
But it does have a lot going for it, especially if you're interested in Irish stuff. So I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10. Mm. And that's being generous.
That is generous.
Thank you.
I realized as soon as I said, usually bring things out as I bring things up, I think this is going to be the opposite case. Because, I mean, yeah, like you said, there are good things. It is, as a movie, it's fine, actually. I was just going to say, as a movie, it's not a spy movie. It's great, but it's not. It's got some great performances. Like, I really enjoy Richard Harris in this because I love him in Camelot, and just getting to see him sort of in another role here is nice for me. Connery gives a good performance. I think I could have used more from Connery, honestly. Like, I enjoyed when he had these that like outburst of rage at the wake, but before that, he's a very cool customer. He's not, I don't see much from, I wanted to see more bubbling under the surface from it.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's just kind of there. I feel like any other actor could have played that role, really.
But I gotta talk about this as a, you know, he's a Scot. He's not Irish. And this is right. Hold on, let me pull up, because I have a letterbox list of every time Connery has played an Irishman.
It has been a lot.
Five other films where he plays an Irishman. Now, one of them is The Frightened City. His character name is Paddy Damien.
Wow.
In Tarzan's Greatest Adventure, his character name is O'Banion. Obviously, Darby O'Gill in The Little People is Michael McBride.
Obviously.
And here, Mom McGuire is Jack Kehoe. The only one that's kind of debatable is Outland, where his name is Marshall William T. O'Neill. It's never mentioned that he's Irish, but, you know, the O'Neill, it's kind of implied. But, of course, the role with Sir Sean Connery, his Oscar in The Untouchables, Jimmy Malone.
That's right.
Irish.
That's right.
As I was getting, oh, wait, I forgot. I haven't mentioned this, and I gotta talk about it. There are six times. However, in his book, To Be a Scot, he's mentioned that actually his one of his grandfathers or one of his grandparents is Irish.
Hmm.
So, entirely realm, he is most famously known as being a Scot. You know, his autobiography is called Being a Scot. So,
I mean, sure, right. And he also has the very distinctive accent
that
he has in almost all of his movies, but not in this one. So I kind of like that.
You
still hear it.
It's still,
he's definitely doing an accent.
I think it's just that he doesn't talk that much, so we don't notice it.
That's true.
Yeah. So true. I could have used more from him in here. I could have used, Connery is a brilliant actor. You know, obviously he's most famous for James Bond, but he did win an Oscar. And you get these other roles from him in the 70s or even the 60s, like The Hill, where you can just see it under the surface. Just, it's got that cool customer, but you can see the rage building up underneath them. I didn't get it here, and I wanted more from him. I'm a Connery fan.
I do want to see The Hill, because they talk about it a lot in the book, and that's his favorite movie that he was in, right?
But you have these, you know, these powerhouses of the 60s, and you can't get much out of them with this. And maybe it's because it's based on a true story, and they felt supposedly based on a true story. Facts. I think it would have been more interesting if they had gone the Hollywood route and had that ending.
I just gave up on being a true story.
I don't know. But with all that said, as a spy film, it's an interesting look at, you know, going deep undercover. It was only because it reminded me of Fast and Furious and Point Break that I felt the tension on whether he was actually going to betray them or not.
Right. They didn't communicate it very well.
Because you never made that connection, I feel like you never felt that tension.
I didn't feel much tension about it.
So
yeah,
it right. could have, like you said, this is ripe for a remake. And I think, well, and if you really, because they also never touch the labor union of it. And if you got into that too, there's so much good drama that you can mine from that. No pun intended.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, though. There's a lot of missed opportunity. Yeah.
So with all that being said, it's not a terrible movie. We've covered much more terrible movies on this podcast. It's not also not a great movie. So I'm straight down the middle, 5 martinis out of 10.
All right, we'll take it. 5 Guinnesses. Okay, anything else to say about the Molly Maguires?
No.
I thought it was a pretty good choice. There's a lot to talk about.
It was a good change of pace for us as well.
Absolutely it was.
Yeah. Talking about Connery, of course, you think Connery, you think Bond. And if you are a James Bond fan in the DC metro area, I think I briefly mentioned it before, but there is a new James Bond fan club. So far as I can tell, the first for the DC area. I'm one of the organizers. You can find us on all the social media platforms, Capitol Royale 007. We have our next event coming up on June 29th at Rudy's Golf. This year is the 60th anniversary of Goldfinger. We're having a golf outing in honor of, you know, the famous scene in Goldfinger. We're calling it Golf Finger. Go on our social media, sign up for our mailing list if you are interested.
Oh my gosh, Christian, where do you find the time to do all this stuff?
Who knows?
Makes it work.
Yep. All right, that being said, thank you everyone for listening and for joining us on our look into the Molly Maguires. You can find us on social media at The Spy Fi Guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And you can find our merch store at redbubble.com. And of course, you can also find these podcasts on YouTube.
That's right.
Until next time, I'm Christian.
And I'm Zach.
And we are The Spy Fi Guys, signing off.
Thank you for listening to The Spy Fi Guys. If you enjoyed our podcast, please be sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. The theme song from this podcast is Mistake the Getaway by Kevin MacLeod from Incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. Films, books, and television shows reviewed by our podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended.
This is a personal podcast. Any views, statements, or opinions expressed in this podcast are personal and belong solely to the participants. They do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the participants may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated. Any views or opinions are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, or individual.
You can find our podcast on social media at The Spy Fi Guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.